It's 11 minutes after 6 on this Wednesday morning from FM 106 with part 1 of the Morning Ag Show. We join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you, Randy, and good morning. Starting off with your grain futures from the Chicago Board of Trade, everything had a very good day yesterday. March corn finished up 4 cents to 356.5. May corn finished up 3 and 3 quarters to 365.75. And July corn finished up 4 cents to 375.5. March soybeans were up 7 cents to 884.75. May beans were at 897, up 7 cents as well. And July beans were at 911, also up 7 cents. Chicago wheat for March was up 24 cents to 446.25. May wheat was up 24.5 cents to 453, and July wheat was up 23.75 cents to 460.75. Soybean meal for March was up $1.60 to 298.30. May bean meal was up $1.70 to $303 even, and July bean meal was up $1.70 as well at $307 even. Soybean oil for March was up 38 cents to 29.78. May bean oil was up 35 cents to 29.99, and July bean oil was up 34 cents to 30.31. We'll turn it over to the Illinois Department of Agriculture now for yesterday's cash grain reports.
This is Tuesday's Port of Grain Price and Trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois cut grain prices were higher on Tuesday afternoon. Technical buying in the wheat market led to spillover strength in corn and soybeans today at the Board of Trade. In northern western Illinois country, grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 5 to 6 cents higher at 317 to 342. Soybean bids are up 4 to 9 cents at 817 to 847. In central Illinois country, grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 3 to 5 cents higher at 329 to 346. Soybean bids are up 7 to 9 cents at 829 to 857. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 4 to 5 cents higher at 324 to 356. Soybean bids are up 6 to 8 cents at 840 to 871. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 7 to 10 cents higher at 859 to 870. Basis was steadied up 3 at 3800 to 27 under the May. High pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at 279 to 293 a ton, up $1.70 a ton with basis unchanged at 2400 to 10 under the May. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 4 cents higher, 341 to 360, with basis steady at 2,500 to 6 under the May. Illinois river barge loading elevators quoted a producer corn bid 6 cents higher, 344 to 351, with basis up 2 at 2,200 to 15 under the May. Soybeans ended up 8 to 12 cents at 853 to 863, basis is up 1 to 5 at 4,400 to 34 under the May. New crop wheat prices rallied 24 to 26 cents at 431 to 452, with basis steadied up to at 30.08 under the July. East St. Louis barge loading terminal always placed their producer corn bids 4 to 6 cents higher at 368 to 369. These elevators raised their soybean prices 5 to 7 cents, quotations at 884 to 886. Soft wheat rallied 24 cents at 479 to 482, and Milo ended the day up 4 cents at 404 to 411. Contract bids producers for October and November delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 336 to 362, soybeans at 850 to 877. In the central part of the state, corn for October and November delivery at 346 to 363, soybeans at 867 to 895. And in the southern part of the state, corn for October and November delivery at 334 to 367, soybeans at 865 to 896, and June, July wheat at 425 to 459. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, live and feeder cattle had losses while hogs had a gain. Live cattle for April were down $2.35 to $126.65. June live cattle were down $1.57 to $118.67. And August live cattle were down $1.17 to $115.47. Feeder cattle for March were down $1 to $141.30. April feeders were down $1.57 to $144.40. And May feeders were down $1.30 to $146.10. Lean hogs for April gained 80 cents up to 63.65. May lean hogs were at 71.75, up 72 cents, and June lean hogs gained 30 cents, up to 80.25. At this time, we'll turn it over to the U.S. and Illinois Departments of Agriculture for yesterday's cash livestock reports.
Thank you. This is Jeff Evers with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture with Tuesday afternoon's livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Afternoon Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded $2.42 higher in a range of $42 to $52, with the weighted average carcass price of $49.61. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow prices were weak with moderate demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows weighing under 400 pounds traded at 30 to 38, 4 to 500 pounds at 35 to 41, 5 to 600 pounds at 38 to 45, over 600 pounds at 42 to 50. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, prices for barrows and gelts at the country buying points were a dollar higher with light demand for moderate offerings ranging from 26 to 32. Receipts for Illinois barrows and gelts totaled 47,858. In the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at $124.50 to $128. And on a dress basis traded at $202 to $205. Heifers on a live basis traded at $126 to $129 and on a dress basis traded at $203 to $205. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 446.22 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $67.62, which was $1.20 higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses are trading higher. Choice carcasses are $228.22, which was 86 cents higher, with select carcasses at $220.35, which was 72 cents higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 120,000 compared to 120,000 for last week and 118,000 for 1 year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 477,000 compared to 478,000 for last week and 464,000 for 1 year ago. Today we also have the Fairview Sale Barn Auction results. Total receipts of 293. Compared to last week, slaughter steers and slaughter heifers traded steady to 50 cents lower. Slaughter cows sold mostly a dollar and a half to four higher. Slaughter bulls traded steady. Trade was active with good demand. Slaughter steers choice 2 to 4 sold in a range of 125.50 to 132.50. Slaughter heifers choice 2 to 4 sold in a range of 125 to 131.50. Slaughter cows with average dressing premium sold in a range of 78 to 94. Breakers sold in a range of 56 to 66.50. Boners sold in a range of 54.50 to 65. Lean sold in a range of 38.50 to 49. And slaughter bulls sold in a range of 72.50 to 83. That concludes our livestock report. This is Jeff Evers with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Part two of the Morning Farm Show brought to you this morning by CHS, farmer-owned with global connections, by the Montgomery County Farm Bureau, where membership means value, and by the CNB Bank and Trust, now with 19 locations to serve you. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks, Randy. One of the biggest obstacles to maximizing yields each year are resistant weeds. Gordon Vail, technical product lead for corn herbicides at Syngenta, says a list of the most challenging weeds remains the same.
The ones that were a real problem this year continue to be water hemp and Palmer amaranth. What I hear from growers is that difficult in controlling them compared to what it used to be, say, 5 to 7 years ago. And what really seems to be the resonating theme is that if you don't hit the application timing right in the post segment, you're not going to get good control. Seeing more pre-uses, so that's really one of the things that they're trying to do to combat that. The other one that I hear a lot about is ragweed, particularly giant ragweed, very difficult weed. Morning glory is another one. Mares tail's a big one, too, in the no-till acres in the eastern corn belt. But those are really the big driver weeds that they're really struggling with and they continue to struggle with.
Vail says producers had the most success with a two-pass control system.
You know, if you want to go one pass, and there are a fair number of growers that actually can do one pass, you know, Acuron is probably the best, not probably, it is the best when it comes to one pass weed control. But if you're dealing with difficult weeds like giant ragweed, morning glory, Palmer, water hemp, you really have to have two passes, and it has to be a timely application. So those are really the best practices that I continue to hear working most successfully for farmers.
Large-seeded broadleaf weeds present a couple of big challenges for producers. The large seeds can sprout from deeper in the soil and can last a long time.
Cocklebur, Morning Glory, Ragweed, those seeds can come from 2 or 3 inches down in the soil. So it makes it much more difficult to control those seeds because you have to get the herbicide down to them. The other thing about the large-seeded broadleaf weeds is that their seed viability is quite long. So where a water hemp or a palmer seed might be viable for 2 or 3 years, whereas seed from a ragweed or a cocklebur, even a Morning Glory, can be decades. You know, some Morning Glory seeds can be viable for 30, 40, 50 years. So you've got seed longevity. So those are really the two things that make them difficult. They come deep in the soil, and the seeds can survive for a long time.
Vail says the best way to control those large-seeded broadleaf weeds is to use a two-pass system. He says the main thing is to make timely applications. If farmers are using a tillage system, the application has to be as close to the tillage as possible. In no-till systems, it's important to make sure to use a proper burn-down application. Post-emergence applications have to happen when weeds are small. He says one of the biggest keys to success is defining exactly what it means to control weeds.
The one concern I have is how a grower actually defines weed control. And I think a lot of times they're defining weed control based on how many plants they have at harvest. I think the weed control is more defined early in the season. How many weeds are you letting compete with your crop before it's 2 or 3 inches tall? Those are really the key drivers. You've got weeds out there. They're taking up water. They're taking up nitrogen. They're taking nutrients. Those are major concerns. I mean, they just don't allow for a good, healthy crop.
The best herbicides have multiple sites of action, but they should also be the most effective sites of action possible. The other big factor is the length of residual control. Vail talks about the benefits of using corn herbicides like Acuron or Acuron Flexi that are the premixes of multiple products and, more importantly, have multiple sites of action.
Two of the key benefits of using herbicides that have the premixes, number one, is it makes it easier on the applicator. So you're not trying to mix 3 different components or 4 different components in the tank. You're not worried about whether the mixer loader got the right rate in. There's less chance for error. That's obviously the first important factor. The other important part of having this multiple sites is you actually can manage your resistance. So when you've got premixes that have multiple effective sites of action, basically have the product rates dialed in for the soil type and the weed that you have, use them at the right rate, can really do a lot to help manage or delay resistance. And you can delay resistance quite significantly.
Again, that was Gordon Vail, technical product lead for corn herbicide at Syngenta. Jill Williams was a guest in the WSMI studios just a few days ago. In our conversation, she talks about how the month of March is National Nutrition Month, as well as other events going on throughout March.
Well, National Nutrition Month is a really exciting month for dietitians. It's our favorite month of the year. National Nutrition Month is a month-long nutrition education and information campaign. It was created by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics back in 1973. It started out as just National Nutrition Week, and it's since grown to encompass the entire month. And then in 2008, they had the first ever Registered Dietitian Day. So this year we celebrate Registered Dietitian Day on March 13th, which is on Wednesday. So that's an exciting day for registered dietitians. We get some recognition. It's an opportunity to honor and recognize the work that RDs do every day to help make our communities healthier.
So how can people outside of, I guess, the realm of dietitian and things like that, how could other people maybe celebrate the month?
So you can celebrate by trying to be healthy. We can discover the benefits of a healthy eating style by choosing foods and drinks that are good for us, including a variety of foods from all the food groups in your diet on a regular basis. You know, we've talked about this before, but it's important to just maybe choose one area to improve on and then build on that. Don't try and, you know, change your whole diet just in one day, but if you can choose a small goal and then eventually large changes are made, but it starts with something small. So one of the things you can do is just add breakfast to your day if you're not eating breakfast, or try adding a new fruit or vegetable, or making sure to have 3 servings of dairy a day.
And speaking of breakfast, it's also National School Breakfast Week. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Right. Yes, in March we also celebrate National School Breakfast Week. It was actually the first week in March was National School Breakfast Week, but schools can really celebrate it anytime they want. You know, sometimes schools are on vacation or something like that, and they can celebrate it anytime. But It's a celebration of the National School Breakfast Program, which was established by Congress in 1975. The National School Breakfast Program actually serves more than 14 million school children every day, which is amazing that we're serving that many kids breakfast every day. And the Dairy Council, the St. Louis District Dairy Council, has started doing some school breakfast parties this month. So as something special that we're doing for our schools, we are trying to help them celebrate school breakfast with some special dairy parties, so schools can choose to do like some games or trivia, or sometimes we'll do like a taste testing of different dairy foods, and you know, really just help them to promote dairy foods, because that it's such a great way at breakfast time to get some dairy foods into your day.
Is breakfast really the most important meal of the day, and why should somebody eat breakfast since it is so called the most important meal of the day?
So called. Yes, it really is the most important meal. It sets the tone for the day. After we fast overnight, breakfast is an opportunity to refuel and rehydrate to power through your day. So every morning, you get to recommit to your health by choosing nutrient-rich foods and drinks. Just keep in mind the five food groups. Each group provides a different profile of nutrients, and choosing a variety is to give your body what it needs to thrive. Studies confirm that kids who eat breakfast reach higher levels of achievement in reading and math. They score higher on standardized tests, and they have better concentration and memory. So it really is super important for kids. And if you think, you know, obviously, if they've done those tests with kids, it's important for adults, too. If you have to go into work, you know, obviously, you want to have some food to fuel your day, not just coffee, you know, some other things, too, to really get you through. And I think, you know, you really tend to kind of overeat at lunch if you don't already have a breakfast or something to eat in the morning.
And then by the time we get to the afternoon, we want a nap.
That's right.
Because of that big lunch.
Right.
For families and people that have a early morning, or they've just got a day where I've got a million things to do, what could be some time-saving suggestions for people to fit breakfast in those days, even when they seem like they're so busy?
Well, you know, sometimes healthy eating does involve just a little bit of planning. So, you know, planning meals, making a grocery list. You know, normally when we plan, we always focus on dinners, but also, you know, don't forget to stock your fridge with breakfast staples. So encourage your family to weigh in on preferences and food preparation contributions that they're willing to make throughout the week. You can prep your breakfast meal the night before so you have it ready to go. I know sometimes people make, like, you know, breakfast sandwiches and put them in the freezer, and then they just, you know, pull it out and maybe microwave it for a few seconds and they have that ready to go, or breakfast burritos or things like that. You can consider some grab-and-go options, so yogurt with toppings, like dried fruit or dried coconut, nuts or seeds, granola, cereal. They even have those, you know, yogurts in a tube. My daughter likes those, the little squeezy yogurts. Those are easy to just take in the car with us. String cheese, we're always taking string cheese on the go, or a mini bagel with egg and cheese. And then, you know, you can prepare that ahead of time, like I said, and put it in the refrigerator. Individual cups of cottage cheese with fruit. A lot of schools offer healthy, balanced breakfast to students. So for some families, choosing that school breakfast option works best with their schedule and ensures that their kids start the school with a protein-rich breakfast that promotes learning. So if you don't have time in the morning to feed your kids breakfast, most schools do offer breakfast at school. Not every single school, but most schools do. So you can ask your child what breakfast foods are offered, and make sure to encourage them to select something from the dairy group also.
And if anybody would have any questions, or they'd like to find out more, where they go to?
Yeah, they can definitely check us out on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, STL Dairy Council. We also have an Instagram, STL Dairy Council, as well. And they can look at our website, stldairycouncil.org. And on our website, we always have monthly recipes for this month. Since we're really featuring breakfast, we have some little egg muffins, which are interesting, egg and cheese. And then we also have a smoothie recipe on our website. And then you can email us with questions at info@stldairycouncil.org.
And again, that was Jill Williams, registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. In local news, the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District is now accepting orders for the 2019 spring fish sale. The sale is planned for Wednesday, April 3rd at 8 a.m., and pre-orders are due by next Tuesday, March 19th. Many species of live fish for pond stocking will be available, as well as fathead minnows and grass carp for pond maintenance. Order forms can be obtained by calling 532-3361 extension 3 or by download from the Soil and Water Conservation District's website at montswcd.com. The University of Illinois Extension Master Gardeners of Montgomery County will be hosting their second annual All Gardeners Day program Saturday, March 16th. The event will be held at the Holy Family Catholic Church Parish Center in Litchfield. Registration will begin at 8 a.m. and the event will run from 8:30 until noon. Cost for the day is $15 and it will include two classes and the keynote speaker. Please pre-register by this Friday, March 15th by going to their website, go.illinois.edu/CJMM, or by calling the Montgomery County Extension Office at 532-3941. And finally, HSHS St. Francis Hospital and the Ag Committee are inviting everyone to attend a farm family event on Wednesday, March 20th at the Lincoln Land Community College in Litchfield. The event will begin at 7 a.m. and breakfast will follow at 7:45. Pre-registration is required for this event, and you can do so by calling Megan Bertolino at 324-8206 by today, Wednesday, March 13th. The event is free of charge, and breakfast is provided by the Litchfield Family Practice Center. For this Wednesday morning, March 13th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.